Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Claude in Washington, D.C.
The UN Convention on the Rights of Indigenous People specifies that we should be included from the design up to negotiation and implementation phase of reparation payment process.
UN rapporteurs call on Germany and the Namibian governments to adhere to international law.
To empower them so that they can cater for themselves, and then it's a measure to alleviate poverty. Because, you know, when you empower a woman, you have empowered a nation.
The Dorian Home for Charity and Social Development empowers vulnerable Nigerian children and women. And fighting in the Sudanese capital and other parts of the country enters a third week Saturday. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. In Namibia, the paramount chief of the Herero people is hailing as a positive development call by UN rapporteurs for Germany and the Namibian governments to adhere to international law. This after local media reported call by 7 UN rapporteurs on Namibia and Germany to respect international law by ensuring that victims of the genocide committed by Germany be included in negotiations between the administrations in Berlin and Windhoek. They also said Germany must unconditionally admit that it committed genocide against the Herero and Nama people and pay reparations. Herero Paramount Chief Professor Mushinda Kashua says his ethnic group and the Nama people have unanimously rejected the agreement signed between the government in Namibia and Germany after years of negotiations between the two countries. The Paramount Chief Kashua tells me that the efforts of the Herero and the Nama people at the UN appear to be yielding fruits.
This is a very significant milestone that we've achieved. It's not just a recognition of genocide that was committed by Germany on the Hereros and Namas in the then Southwest Africa, but it's a push that Germany must recognize that it has done that genocide and it must pay reparations.
But there was an agreement between Germany and the Namibian government. The Nama and the Herero groups rejected the offer. So does that mean that you go back to the drawing board for fresh negotiations to begin? Wouldn't this be a waste of time, as some people are saying?
You see, what the special rapporteurs, and it's not just one special rapporteur, these are 7 special rapporteurs of the United Nations. They've clearly highlighted that the negotiations that took place between the two governments at the exclusion of the legitimate representatives of the Herero and Nama peoples is in violation of international law. The UN Convention on the Rights of Indigenous People specifies that we should be included from the design up to negotiation and implementation phase of reparation payment process. So, therefore, the special rapporteurs highlighted that our exclusion is in violation of that international law, and therefore the reparation package that comes from it cannot stand, cannot achieve reconciliation. It's invalid. The second point that the rapporteurs also agrees with us is that the joint declaration between the two governments, the German government and the Namibian government, that has resulted in development projects that will be then implemented in areas of the Hereros and Namas is inapplicable. Development aid cannot substitute reparation because development aid is very limited and reparation covers a number of areas, that is restitution, compensation, non-repetition, satisfaction, a couple of things that we should be involved.
Looking at the conclusion of the 7 UN rapporteurs,
Will the Nama and the Herero people be ready for these negotiations? And do you think you can negotiate better than the Namibian government?
Surely we would be ready to negotiate. And even if we are not ready, that is not the criteria to waive our right. It is our inalienable right to negotiate for ourselves. If we are not in that position, it is our demand. It is within our rights to be capacitated to be ready for that situation. But in any case, we have a framework that we have developed between the two communities that we are willing, that we are ready to engage in the negotiations.
But Professor Mashinde, what if these two governments ignore the suggestions or recommendations by the UN rapporteurs? And what's the next steps for you?
You see, these two governments already ignored our earliest request to be involved in the negotiations from the word go. But we have not stopped the fight. We have not stopped to wage, continuing with what we think we should be doing to achieve restorative justice. These two governments cannot proceed with negotiating a deal that is only between Namibia and Germany when Hereros and Namas are also in Botswana, South Africa, Angola, the United States, Canada, and elsewhere. And it's only the Hereros and Namas that can, through their representative, that can negotiate for that broad-based constituency.
Where does this leave the Nama and the Herero people in their demand for reparations from the German government?
What the rapporteurs highlighted is the violations of these two countries in negotiating at our exclusion, and highlighted a number of areas that the two governments must meet to ensure that the Hereros and Namas included in the negotiations, and at the end of the day, we have a proper reparation package for where our people are and for our people. If the two governments ignore those recommendations, we will use the recommendation to inform the German citizens, the Namibian citizens, to be in position to push their own governments to pay reparations to the Hereros and Namas.
Professor Mushinda Kashua is the Herero Paramount Chief. He spoke with me from the Namibian capital, Windhoek. At the recent spring meetings of the World Bank and IMF in Washington, Godwin Obaseki, the governor of Nigeria's Edo State, shared his administration's success in using public resources for its basic education sector transformation project. Governor Obaseki says his government deployed substantial resources in the effort to improve teaching and learning outcomes. The effort also provided insight on how institutional reforms help to improve foundational literacy and numeracy. The Edo State governor was the only person from West Africa to share progress in improving education at the Washington meetings. I sat down with Governor Obaseki to talk about what his administration is currently doing to improve the sector. The governor, who was just re-elected, says Edo State has become an important advisor on how to transform public schools in the region. Here is the concluding part of the conversation.
Do you think this is sustainable? Because usually new governments come, well, you have been re-elected recently in the gubernatorial election, but is this sustainable if you were to leave office after the next 4 years? Is this sustainable?
Yes, if you have the political will, it is.
Okay.
And I believe it will be sustainable beyond me, because this is, you have almost more than 500,000 children who have gone through this, mm-hmm. and the parents have seen it work. So if you had an elder kid who went through an Edo Best program, you know, you don't want the junior brother or sister mm-hmm. not to. So there's going to be pressure from the parents. Secondly, we are not breaking the bank to accomplish this. We're just reprioritizing. And with the global priorities today, I believe education, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on politicians globally to spend more on, you know, human capacity,
right,
on education, on health. We are spending about 10% of our annual budgets on education. And I think we can, you know, we can sustain that, we can maintain that. So I don't, you know, I'll be very surprised if there's a rollback. The last reason why I just don't I'm confident they won't be rolled back. And the teachers themselves, you know, don't forget the teacher unions are very, very powerful.
Right.
They have adopted and accepted these means because they can see the outcomes. And I don't think they'll sit idle and allow any politician come in and roll back.
So far, what has been the reaction from, one, the parents, and then the two, the students who have gone through this process?
Let me just give you a quick story. Oh. I had a parent come in very early days of Edovest and came in and said, she had a problem. And I asked, what was the problem? She said, look, I have two sons. One is 6 and one is 10. Mm-hmm. The 6-year-old is in primary 1 and the 10-year-old is in primary 4. Since you introduced Edovest, I found out that because the younger one is part of a pilot for Edovest, he's no longer socializing with his brother, because when he gets back from school, he wants to do his homework, he wants to do his rhymes. He doesn't want to play football mm-hmm. with the brother anymore. And so I'm getting worried. And, within one term, he can read much better than his brother, who is 10, and came to me and said, look, Governor, what do I do? That story, perhaps reveal the kind of impact Edovest has made. Even from its very early days now. Mm-hmm. We run a couple of conferences, seminars, training workshops. We're going to be having the education week next, in a few weeks' time. And we get these kids to participate. Mm. And without prompting, you'll be very, very amazed at the quality, their confidence, at the quality of their thinking. It's the proof is there. Mm. And then there was a study that was carried out not too long ago, and it's been reviewed, which now has shown that kids who have gone through our best program read 70% better than their peers who haven't gone through the same program in the country. And there are standards for testing numeracy skills and standards for testing reading skills, and the Edovest kids are way, way clearly ahead of their peers.
So let's move to your recent election. Now that you have been re-elected by the people of Edo State, what's next for you? What is the vision? How do you intend to move Edo State forward, albeit with the challenges that Nigeria as a whole face, including security or insecurity challenges and, lack of funds to fund projects? What's next?
What's next? I think what's next will be gleaned from what we're doing. Mm. So what have we accomplished? Mm. My first term, and now the first few years of my second term. First, it's about your human capacity, your people. Mm-hmm. In the area of education, you can see what we're doing with Edovest. In the area of healthcare, we're doing exactly the same thing, focusing on primary healthcare and making sure that we get healthcare to the mass of our people. Mm-hmm. In the area of security, we have, if I say so. Without being immodest, being able to secure Edo, relatively speaking. Mm. When you look at the incidents reports, you're not seeing the kind of frightening situation or condition I met. Mm. Kidnapping has dropped significantly. Yes, we're still having a few farmer header clashes here and there, particularly in the dry season, but we're on top of that because we've invested heavily in security. So there's a sense of safety and security in Edo, and we're seeing quite a lot of traffic, particularly commercial traffic, coming through.
Godwin Obaseki is the governor of Nigeria's Edo State. He spoke with me from here in Washington, D.C. In Nigeria, the Dorian Home for Charity and Social Development, which was commissioned in 2021 by Vice President Yemi Osinbajo, consists of 700 homes for orphaned and vulnerable children. The $5 million edifice situated in Akure in Ondo State is described as the biggest orphanage in Africa, with a 500 capacity skills acquisition center for vulnerable women, a large hall for events, a clinic, and a worship center. For over 10 years, the Dorian Home has rendered humanitarian services, including medical outreach, skills acquisition, vocational training, and capacity building for the less privileged. For more about the charity organization's vision and prospects, I reached Dr. Tolulola Bayude. She is the founder of Dorian Home for Charity and Social Development.
Dorian Home for Charity and Social Development is about charity and empowering vulnerable women in our society. When I started Dorian Home few years back, all I wanted to do was just to empower orphanages and vulnerable women in Nigeria and in Africa. I visited several countries, you know, especially in the West African area. But what I saw moved me to compassion. I saw much hunger, neglect, and deprivation in the eyes of the children. And I wanted to do more than just support them occasionally. I wanted to build a befitting place where they can call home and where they can feed, and then the women as well, to empower them so that they can cater for themselves. And then it's a measure to alleviate poverty. Because, you know, when you empower a woman, you have empowered a nation.
Dr. Bayode, who qualify to be accepted into the Dorian home?
The children from 0 to 10, we put them in the home. And then the ones that are vulnerable on the street, we put them in the school and we give them to guardians, you know, taking care of them. And then with the women, the ones that are vulnerable, especially the widows and the aged, so we empower them and make sure that they are back on their feet in order to provide for their family and their children.
So for the children that are being taken care of by the Dorian home, you said they are taken to school. What is the plan for them as they go to school? Is it to the university? What is the plan for them?
To any level they want, actually. Because once you, to me, and then what we stand for in Dorian home, it will take them away from the street and give them life, give them hope. I'm very sure that they will be well-to-do, and then they can take care of themselves and then take care of the community, and they can stand on their feet.
So how sustainable is this from Dorian home?
My vision is for Dorian home to outlive me. That's why I'm hoping to get vision partners, people that are of like minds, both women and men, that will, you know, some people have the mind to help the needy. They're looking for people like me to carry their fulfillment, to carry it out. Actually, the work is enormous because we're looking at empowering about 2,000 women yearly. We have a women's center, Dorian Home Women Development Center, that takes about 1,000 women. We are trying to see how this program will continue. And then if, by God's grace, we are able to see vision partners, I believe we'll spread our tentacles to everywhere. And for me to have done this out of my pocket, thinking that this is my dream, I believe people of like mind will join me to see how this dream can continue.
Talk to us about your core vision, for which reason you decided to put up this Dorian home, and what is your message to the Nigerian society as well as the international community as you carry out this vision?
My vision is to see the children succeed. And also, I believe that these children, if they are well taken care of and they are out of the street, they will be somebody in life. At Dorian Home, we place premium on children's safety, education, feeding, and overall welfare. You know, today, when you look at the faces of our children, you see them, they are very bright, they are very happy. In their eyes, you see sparkles of life and the hope that they have a better future. In Dorian Home, our mandate is not just to take in less privileged orphans children, but to train them in the way they should go. Today, I can boast without any fear of contradiction that in Dorian Home, we are raising the future president and future lawyers, doctors, musicians, movie stars. I believe that if we can get vision partners, we will do much more, because we would like to spread to other African countries.
Dr. Tolulola Bayode is the founder of Dorian Home for Charity and Social Development in Nigeria. She spoke with me from here in Washington. Fighting in the Sudanese capital and other parts of the country, including Darfur, entered a third week Saturday, despite several ceasefire agreements that have not significantly reduced violence in many urban neighborhoods. Calm did appear to be restored in some places after Sudanese police loyal to the country's army deployed in parts of Khartoum. For VOA, Edward Iranian reports from the Egyptian capital, Cairo.
Civilians applauded as Sudanese government police deployed in parts of Sudan's capital, Khartoum, including the city's central market, around midday Saturday. It was not clear how long the police would be able to prevent fighting from breaking out again in those areas. Fresh fighting was reported in parts of the neighboring city of Omdurman between the army and the rival rapid support forces. UN envoy Volker Perthes told Arab media that he sensed that both military commander General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan and rapid support forces head Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo were closer to negotiations than they were previously. Burhan, however, told Saudi-owned Al Arabiya TV that he would not sit down at the same table as the leader of the rebellion, as he put it. An attempt by the Egyptian foreign ministry to mediate between both sides was abruptly canceled Saturday. Dagalo told Sky News Arabia that he was ready and willing to sit down and negotiate, but that a civilian government must be established as quickly as possible. Dagalo also claimed that his men were observing the truce, but that the army was still firing at them. Citizens, however, complained on social media that Dagalo's rapid support forces had raided their homes and stolen money, gold, and other possessions. VOA could not independently confirm the claims. Amateur video on social media showed burned vehicles lining the streets of a number of Khartoum's neighborhoods and dead bodies that had been covered with blankets lying in the streets. A Sudanese journalist told Arab media that many residents of Khartoum were trying to flee the capital during intermittent periods of calm, but that a bus ticket to the northern border of the country facing Egypt has now reached the astronomical price of $600. A ticket normally costs about $125. Some fruit and vegetable markets were reported to be open, but witnesses complained that many banks and ATMs had run out of money because of the prolonged fighting. Adel, a Sudanese businessman, told VOA that his neighborhood in Omdurman was being subjected to periodic shelling and airstrikes from both sides in the conflict.
We are still safe somehow, and the bombing is continuing also, is still continuing now. During my speaking also, you may listen the voice of plan that to bomb from place to place. But we are safe.
Arab media showed video of fighting continuing in the western Darfur province capital of Jenina, bordering the Republic of Chad. One Arab news channel claimed that 100 people had been killed in the fighting. VOA could not independently confirm the casualty figure. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
U.S. oil giant ExxonMobil has joined France's Total Energies in seeking security assurances from Mozambique's government before restarting gas project in troubled Cabo Delgado province. The oil firms shelved their multi-billion dollar project in 2021 after Islamist militant attacks. Mozambique's military and foreign troops have since made progress against the insurgents, and President Philippe Nyusi said Wednesday it was safe for the project to resume. For VOA, Charles Mwangwiro reports from the Mozambican capital, Maputo.
The general director of ExxonMobil Mozambique, Anne Gibbs, says his company needs long-term stability in Cabo Delgado before it can think of restarting a $30 billion liquefied natural gas LNG project in northern Mozambique. Suspected Islamist insurgents forced the suspension of the project in 2021 when they attacked a town near the gas projects managed by Total and ExxonMobil.
Key questions is security risks. Those are the ones we're working very the government right now to help mitigate. And every large capital project has a significant amount of risks that need to be resolved and handled at the time of investment. That can be price risk, cost risk, changes and fluctuations in the market. I mean, that's a big part of what we do is large capital investment projects.
Exxon's project is located next to another huge LNG facility that is being built by French company Total. On Wednesday, Mozambican President Philippe Nyusi expressed optimism that Total will resume construction of its project. He says the cooperation and coordination with Total Energies is very favorable. The work environment also contributes to the fact that at any time they can resume activity, he adds. Mozambique, among the poorest countries in the world, holds presidential elections next year when Nyusi's second term in office ends. The poll is viewed by analysts as an opportunity for the ruling Frelimo party to boost its popularity and diffuse growing frustrations of unemployment and poverty. So far, Frelimo has not picked Nyusi's successor, fueling speculation that Nyusi might seek a third term. Carlton Kadiado, a lecturer of international relations and security studies at Mozambique's Juan Chisano University in Maputo, says that the political uncertainty might influence decisions by foreign companies scrambling to tap Mozambique's vast natural resources. While Islamist militants continue to attack places in Cabo Delgado, he says security is not the big issue as it once was.
Again, I'm saying the security issues are almost solved, not 100% set, but now what is preventing Total to go is more political than security issues. And this third term issue is being in some way on the mindset of those who want to be sure that stability will prevail in Mozambique.
Charles Mangwiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
This is The Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Coming up in the second half, Nightline Africa Sports with Samson O'Malley, and that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, and music from African Collection. It's now time for Nightline Africa Sports, and for that, let's join Samson O'Malley. Hello, Samson.
Hi, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. The CAF Under-17 Africa Cup of Nations Algeria 2023 got off to a winning start for the host Algeria on Saturday after a short, precise, colourful and entertaining opening ceremony. Captain Muslim Antaouf scored twice as Algeria began their Under-17 Africa Cup of Nations with a 2-0 victory over Debuton Somalia at the Nelson Mandela Stadium in Algiers on Saturday. There are three matches scheduled for Sunday. Senegal will play Congo in the early kickoff, while Nigeria will face Zambia. The late kickoff will see Morocco take on South Africa. The semi-finalists for the premier club competition on the continent, the CAF Champions League, have emerged. Record winners Al Hakli have made it to their sixth consecutive semi-final after holding off for a 0-0 draw with Morocco's Raja Club Athletic in Casablanca on Saturday. The result sees Al Hakli go through 2-0 on aggregate as they won by the same scoreline in the first leg played in Cairo last weekend. Raja have bowed out against Al Hakli for a second consecutive season, having also met the Egyptians at the same stage last term. In Tunisia, Osporans reached the semi-finals of the CAF Champions League despite being held to a 1-1 draw at home against Algerian side JS Kabylie on Saturday night. The home side dominated the second leg at the Stade Olympique Hamadi Agribi and advanced 2-1 on aggregate after the tight game in raids. At the Loftus Versfeld Stadium in Pretoria, South Africa Mamelodi Sundowns eased into the semi-finals after a 2-1 victory over CR Belouizdad on Saturday, winning 6-2 on aggregate. Wydad Casablanca claimed a 1-0 win over Simba SC in Friday night's CAF Champions League quarterfinal second leg clash at the Stade Mohamed V in Morocco. The Moroccan Giants went on to win 4-3 on penalties after the tie ended in a 1-1 draw on aggregate, with Simba having won 1-0 in the first leg encounter in Tanzania on April 22nd. And now to basketball. The 2023 Basketball Africa League NAI Conference resumed on Saturday after a rest day on Friday. City Oilers of Uganda late charge was not good enough to stun Al Hakli as they lost the game by 2 points, 70-72, after their fight back on Saturday night came a little too late to try and cause what would have been the biggest upset in the 2023 Basketball Africa League NAI Conference so far. In the earlier game, Petro de Luanda's depth showed up on Saturday to beat Favoriviero de Beira 101-76 points. 12 of 13 Petro players scored 3 points or more each to help the Angolan champions improve to 2-0 in the NAIA Conference. And that's all for this week's edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Samson. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African sports. Nightline Africa Sports. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospects in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Hello, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Early last week, President Cyril Ramaphosa of South Africa made a statement which seemed to minimize the repercussions of South Africa in the event of President Putin attending the summit meeting of BRICS in the country. He said that the ANC, the African National Congress, had studied South Africa membership in the International Criminal Court, ICC, and had concluded that because of the way the ICC treats different states, South Africa should withdraw. He then added that the cabinet had also accepted and seemed to say that this is the end of the matter. However, few hours after his statement, there was a report that the president had misspoken. It was not explained whether he had misspoken on the matter of procedure or in a substantive sense. The procedural issue could have been that the president assumed that because the ANC and the cabinet have approved the withdrawal of South Africa from the ICC, that was the end of the matter. It may well be that he should have said that the matter will be forwarded to the parliament for its concurrence. However, there were other reports in the South African press which seemed to suggest that because the South African court had ruled about the manner of treating President Al-Shami of Sudan when he visited South Africa was unconstitutional. And therefore, they said, if it was unconstitutional to deal with former President of Sudan, then South Africa could not withdraw from the ICC. It is nowhere could be found in UN law that any sovereign state taking a independent sovereign decision to withdraw from any of its institutions and UN itself is wrong once they have fulfilled all available procedures. One should bear in mind that in many times in the UN, in the early 60s, Indonesia, displeased with the way this assembly was proceeding, decided to withdraw from the UN and said they would form their own institution. It only returned to the UN when it could not form its own UN. Similarly, a number of Western states who did not like the direction UNESCO was going some decades ago decided to withdraw from UNESCO. Also, during the Trump administration, the president was not happy with decisions being made by WHO. And on that basis, he announced that the United States would withdraw from WHO because, in his words, the organization's head was in the pocket of China. Furthermore, we have had a situation recently when Russia displeased with the United Nations Human Rights Council decided to withdraw. So one else should make it very clear that there is no way in constitutional terms that a government could fail to take its own decision once it followed the procedures. This needs to be clarified because there should not be any impression that only some African states cannot take independent constitution. Of course, we don't know whether after that statement by the president, partners threatened sanction if the procedure they should proceed. In any case, this is a matter that should be clarified. And it would be helpful to many of the states in Africa if the government of South Africa would clarify what it meant by this president misspeaking. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect. A flashback with music from the continent. Baby, give me goosey pimple with your cute little
So I'm about why you're ready, dear. I hold my team when I would see the demon on my bread, and then I dream hard and you would hear. And she may do nothing, so see me just so. To put my name, no be a better young car. Father, the loom, my new missus, so bomb me, so me, Cassana, me, no, me, no, thing, we are. Ah, ain't in a me door with you. Oh, my men, Cassacra, no, we're putting me, what's him, I see. Baby, and I wash a demo, one packet, I kick her. I'm coming to sign us on the bura, na me drama my neighbor. I hold my chin, yeah, that was so, yeah.
Crazy, baby, cause I give you my heart and my body. Whenever you need love, call me. I will give it to you 6 in the morning. I'll be your hobby. I will do anything for the body. So, that love, yeah, that, that, baby, baby. My sweet potato, hey. Baby, oh, him Doritos. Answer to me, come and you made ya, yes, oh, yeah, yeah. Girl, your power, they connect me. A beauty like a bunch of rose. She say, a beauty skillful and a messy. You don't know, say you bust up my brain, yo.
Jennifer, Jamie, what made me suja? Even petit for mona when you be a so. Yemenya ne cane when you need papa one woman come up with the TV who done a tutato. From body by papa when you're done is easy. Come for notchy the Jamina Bonipia. And I do the so much so do be the Bramma Mamun Timma who's a penny jam won't come here. Won't be win a whoop a day, whoop a kaya motu. Unim Yamakoma Pelbani de Madeo. Come my men, I get the trimity, send the Kenika. Yawa, you may feel what you say, that you will be.
Otimbi na Timbelio. Yuma no kakats.
Inas.
Soba no kakats.
Yuma
no kakats.
Jizo. Ojele minona kwe. Ozali no lokote. Otoki no kutute. Na pete kakabongo yo beba pesa ya.
Kubu, Vital Kameni. Baby, know that you're the one. You got to
help me, feed me. I'll live out my code that is slow. I don't even understand now. Come on, baby, take my heart with you. Never leave me here alone. I never wanna live a life without you. Oh, kande mamu haba debi kasunu. Kande mahadiya debi kasunu. Why you killing me? Baby, you can beat me, kick me, slap me. I don't even care, cause that is true love. You can diss me, slap me, beat me. I'll never my cold that is slow.
Party.